This message is brought to you by DoNotAge.org, the longevity research organisation that's on a mission to extend health span for as many people as possible via products that actually work. Start your journey today at DoNotAge.org and use code LLAMA for a 10% discount. That's LLAMA.
Hello and welcome to the LLAMA podcast. I'm Peter Bowes, and LLAMA, Live Long and Master Aging, is where we explore the science and stories behind human longevity. We spend a lot of time on this podcast on the science that could help us live longer, healthier lives. We've also heard in recent weeks that being old, even if you have good health and vitality, can still be a huge challenge, with social isolation a key issue for many elderly people. Well, in a few moments, I'll be joined by Dr. Caroline Cicero, an assistant professor at the University of Southern California, Davis School of Gerontology. Caroline studies the aging population and focuses on how local communities could be better places to grow old. But before we speak to Caroline, let's go to the movies.
All right, so I want to introduce you guys. This is my friend Peter. And Peter runs a podcast called LLAMA, which stands for Live Long and Master Aging.
I'm at a senior center in Los Angeles at an acting class they call Tuesdays with Matthew. The program involves the senior citizens here reenacting iconic scenes from well-known films. They even make videos of their performances.
And what it is we put on famous scenes from famous movies with the seniors starring as the leads. So we do everything from Fences to Gone with the Wind and everything in between, and it gives you guys a chance to get up and shine. And everyone always asks me who's new. They say, well, do I have to be an actor? And we always say, the worse actor you are, the better this class will be. So what's your name in the back?
It's the brainchild of Matthew Hoffman, a Hollywood-based writer and TV interviewer, and a unique example of how the community can work with its elderly residents in quite an inspiring way. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for coming to our little class.
Well, this is quite a unique class. It is very impressive. How did it all start?
It started about 10 years ago. I first moved to Los Angeles with the dream of being a TV host, and I came out here, and long story short, I kept taking these meetings and auditions, and I didn't have a reel. What we in the business know is, you know,
a show reel.
A calling card or anything. And I basically, at the suggestion of many people, they said, well, get a reel. It's when you talk to people and, you know, whatever. And it's like, I didn't have anyone to talk to. And I used to drive by this senior center all the time. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'll talk to the seniors. They'll be great. I'll interview them. They'll give me, you know, some fun sound bites, and it'll be great. And that's it. And
which is a unique approach to making a show reel.
Yeah, but also you're talking to a unique person who didn't quite really get it. Now I have many reels in with no seniors on it, so things are okay. But I went in to interview this one group, and I just fell in love with them. And it was a class that was ongoing already. I came to the center and just started talking to these seniors and interviewing them, and it was just the best day, and I had so much fun. And I was like, I'll come back. You guys meet here like next week, right? Same time. And they were like, yeah. I was like, okay. And then 1 week turned into another. I had this huge group of people who would come to see me every week, and I was like, if they are this excited about doing just reading The Color Purple, what if we made our own Color Purple? What if I brought in the costumes? What if I brought in the wigs? What if I brought in, the green screen that would transport them to places these seniors never even thought they could go in a day? And I did, and it was amazing. And then we did another one, and another one, and another one, and we just had so much fun. And one of the best days of my life was literally bringing the movies that we had all made to the seniors to have their movie night, to watch themselves on the big screen. And I was so nervous because I knew that when we did the movies, it was so fun to do them that I was nervous to see what the seniors' reactions would be to see themselves on the big screen. And they just lived, and it was just the most exhausting, amazing day ever.
So this
to
was
see that.
An evolving process.
Oh, it's still evolving. Yeah.
Initially, though, what was it about the people that drew you in?
I just instantly loved them. I mean, I can't describe it other than that. I just, you know, there's something about seniors, you know, that they just have no filter. They're just real. They've gotten so real. And, you know, we're in a town that is not real a lot of the time. So it was refreshing. They were lovely. They were just my friends.
And is there something about giving them an opportunity to do something that otherwise wouldn't exist? That you had a unique talent for the kind of class that you created and are still evolving. And it's brought something into their lives that a lot of them didn't realize they could get something out of.
Yeah, and I think the same goes for me too. I mean, I've learned so much from them. You know, they are, make no mistake, and you've witnessed a class today, they are the stars. I am just the vehicle or the catalyst to basically give these seniors something to do for an hour once a week that is purely enjoyable, that, you know, gives them the opportunity to forget their troubles, to, you know, have fun, to talk to each other. We had, what, like 20 people in today's class? You know, if it wasn't for this class, like, where would they be? You know, like, what would they be doing? So the fact that it's here and it gives them that opportunity is amazing. And I always say, too, people are like, well, why famous scenes from famous movies? And, you know, it's just easy. It could be anything. It, you know, the scripts serve as a connection for all of these wonderful people to kind of get up and shine and to have fun.
So, on the count of three, Matthew Senior's Academy Award nominated film, this is Fences. One, two, three, action!
Rose, got something to tell you.
Well, come on.
Rose, I don't know how to say this. I can't explain it none.
It's just okay, hard. My name is Renee Braun. I love to entertain. I sing and I act and I just have a lot of fun.
And how old are you?
91.
And what is it about Matthew's class that you like? What makes you want to come to it?
Well, it's a fun class because it makes all of us feel like we're stars, actresses, actors, and the skits are very funny sometimes, and we enjoy each other. We're all great at doing what we do.
And how does it make you feel about yourself?
I feel good. That's the only thing I can tell you. I feel good.
Do you actually feel better once you've done something like this, that you've got out and you've met some people and you've performed? And does
yes.
that actually, on an ordinary day when maybe you're just at home by yourself or with a few people, but here you have an audience and you get a chance to show off a little bit?
That's true. At home, you know, it's kind of boring. And here, it just makes you forget everything. If you have any ailments or a little pain, it just goes away.
One thing I often hear from people of your generation is that they feel forgotten, that they almost feel as if they're pushed aside because they're too old to do certain things. What do you think of that?
Well, some people do feel that way, and they're afraid to maybe take a chance coming over here and changing their routine. So somebody has to try to get them out. You have to push yourself. Sometimes I have to push myself, but I love doing it and I always feel better.
You got to push yourself sometimes just to get here?
Sometimes, but then I'm glad I am. I do. When you're 91, you can't do what you did when you were 51. So you have to push yourself a little bit, and I do a lot of that.
Hi, my name is Dee Burress, and I'm here participating in Matthew's class. I'm 75, and I enjoy life so far. So far, so good.
How long have you been coming to these classes?
Now, I've been coming to his classes since he started here, and it's been a few years. I don't exactly know how many, but a few years. They fly by because we have so much fun.
And tell me, what do you do that is so much fun?
Just being alive. I just love life. I enjoy. This has been another added project to my life, the acting class. I try to always stay active, and so this has added another dimension to my life, and it is so much fun. My kids get a kick out of me, and when they see the tapings that Matthew has done, and they're proud of me, so it gives me an uplift.
And you say it gives you an uplift. Mm-hmm. The alternative would be maybe not socializing as much, not giving you an opportunity to be a bit of an extrovert at time and showing off to people. That brings out something in you that gives you a buzz, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, it does, yeah. Once I wake up in the morning and realize, okay, today is Matthew's class, and that sort of makes me get up out of bed to come, because otherwise I could stay in bed and look at TV and eat bonbons, and I would just, you know, and I like doing that too. But it gives me a little extra oomph, because I want to see him. I want to see what he's got up his sleeve. There's always something a little new going on with Matthew. And, you know, and I look forward to that.
And he lets you in a little bit on his life, doesn't
yes,
he? He tells you
yes.
what he's been doing the previous weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
very busy.
He's a bit of a flirt with a few of you
as well,
isn't
he? Oh, he flirts with everyone, you know. And we really get a kick out of that, you know. Yes. Yes, we love him.
And you're a pretty good actress, aren't you?
Thank you, thank you. It has brought a lot of that out of me, too, that I didn't know I had the deep feelings for a lot of the parts, you know.
And so. The scene you were doing just now from Fences, had you read that script before?
No, not until Matthew gave. I haven't even seen the movie, but I've heard so much about the movie. And then I saw the previews of the part that I did. I saw the previews. What's her name? The actress.
Viola
Davis, yes. And that was such a touching scene. And so I love that. That did something to me. It made me feel good and made me, something deep down inside, I could feel that life. I could feel it.
I gave 18 years of my life to stand in the same spot with you. Don't you think I ever wanted other things? Don't you think I had dreams and hopes? What about my life? What about me?
And I think you're actually quite modest about your abilities, because now that I know that you were sight reading from the script that we are hearing you perform, that's quite an ability.
Well, I loved it. It came out. That was a surprise to me, too, for that part especially. Yeah. I could be in her shoes almost. Mm-hmm.
And the question I asked just a moment ago about what you would say to people who haven't been here, who might think about coming here, who might be a little bit nervous about coming to something like this. What would you say to them?
I would say, honey, come on out. Don't be nervous. There is nothing. We all have fun. And the crazier you are, the more fun it is. Come out. Get your life, get some oomph in your life. And, you know, yeah, so come and see us.
And you're never too old.
Never too old, because if we got 91-year-old here, believe me, I've got a lot of living to do. Yes.
My name is Alan White. I'm 82 years old. I retired in 2001. I was married for 51 years. Last month was 6 years ago that I lost my wife to cancer. And I've been coming to Matthew's class for several years, and it's a great class for therapy. We have a lot of fun. He's a great guy.
And Matthew, of course, goes away. He films what you do here, and then you see the end product and uses his green screen, and it makes it look like you're in the movies, makes you look like you're in Hollywood.
When he does the green screen and costumes, it's a complete change.
When you see yourself on screen, how does that feel?
Different. I mean, when he does the costumes, I mean, it's just so fantastic what he does with costumes and stuff.
And do you feel that this, coming to this event every week and the socializing and the opportunity to perform, is it helping you? Is it helping your health?
I think it's just a spiritual kind of therapy for me, and I really enjoy it.
My name is Lillian Rosenblum, and I'm 48 years old. You can take it from there. I never tell my age. I've been retired for quite some time and sort of a frustrated actress. This is what appealed to me in this class. And I love coming here.
So, you have fun, you don't tell anyone quite how old you are, but you are of, let's say, of a certain age.
I am.
to come here. Why do you come here? What do you get out of it?
Oh, I come here, first of all, there's so many things that that inspire me. I mean, the acting class is great. I enjoy it very much. I've always wanted a little bit of a frustrated actress. And of course, the singing is what has started me here, coming to this center. And I love singing. It's been very good for me. It makes me want to get up in the morning, too.
We've heard that already, that it gives you an extra buzz in the morning, knowing that you're coming
Absolutely.
To meet your friends.
Absolutely.
And a chance just to show off a bit.
Show off, maybe, but it's I hate getting old. But coming here, you know, because we're all in the same place. Everybody here is a senior. You know, it's not the age that matters. It's how you act to each other. And you have friends and you have people and you're talking to someone. Sitting home is not a great thing. Watching television is not a great thing. But when you're here, everyone has a story of their life. And that's of interest. The music takes away any kind, if you're singing or acting, you forget about all the things that may be negative in your life. And it gives you a positive. And I think people live longer when they are together with other people, having conversation and sharing their lives together.
Something I've heard a lot, that just the very fact that you have something to look forward to.
Something to look forward to.
Keeps you going.
Absolutely.
And how valuable is that to you, knowing that you can have something to look forward to and that it's probably keeping you healthy?
Yes, I'm sure it does. I think the whole idea of me coming, I was supposed to go to the doctor today and I canceled my doctor's appointment because I didn't want to miss Matthew's class. I missed it last week. But Matthew is a dear and we enjoy this class so much. Sometimes we go out of this class laughing, so it starts the day off. And it's very nice.
And the doctor's appointment can wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, it's I decided that I'm not sick. So.
Give them a round of applause!
It's easy to see how this weekly class gives this group of senior citizens something to keep living for. We'll come back to them before the end of the podcast, but now let's talk to Dr. Caroline Cicero, an assistant professor at the University of Southern California, Davis School of Gerontology. Caroline studies aging populations and the communities that they live in. Hi, Caroline.
Hello.
Great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
From what we've just heard, these senior citizens talking about this weekly experience of theirs, Tuesdays with Matthew, what do you think?
I think it's wonderful. It's a great opportunity to have a scheduled activity to look forward to every Tuesday, get out of the house. As one of our seniors said, she loves to just be able to get out of the house and have something to look forward to. And I think that has a lot to do with how people are aging more healthily rather than having nothing to look forward to and sitting at home.
The socialization aspect of it, for me, came across very strongly, certainly spending the day there, or at least the morning, that they were talking to each other, they were having fun, that they were laughing, and it was something that perhaps otherwise might not be in their lives at that moment.
Right. Well, I love that Matthew leads them in such an enthusiastic way. So some events that they could come to, such as a computer class or a health promotion class at a senior center or a location, might not be so animated, where they do have a chance to come together in those situations. In this situation with Matthew, he is really using his personality to bring out the best in them. You asked one of them about being an extrovert. You know, it's great that extroverts can come and act in this situation, especially in Los Angeles, where they may have been affiliated or knowing friends who are in the entertainment business their whole lives. You know, the question is for people who aren't extroverted, what we can do to get them out of the house as well. They might be sitting at home and don't want to participate in something like that. But I love how Matthew brings out the enthusiasm in his group.
Yeah, that actually came across to me as well, that as well as giving them just something to do on that day, it is perhaps a venue for these unrealized dreams that they might have been harboring, that you're never too old to go back and maybe do what you might have wanted to do when you're 40 or 50, but there were other things happening then, and you can certainly do it at 75 or even 91.
Right. Just the opportunity to have fun with it. right? I don't know that any of the participants thinks they're going to become a movie star, but just in a lighthearted way, have an opportunity to have fun with it and not have to have a goal, right? When we're younger, we think, oh, if I'm going to go take an acting class, it has to be for a purpose, especially if I'm in Los Angeles, right? And if I don't get something out of it, I might be a failure. But in this way, it's just something to have socialization and have fun and not have to worry about the outcome.
And there was the lady that talked about canceling her doctor's appointment so she could be at the class. Now, clearly, obviously, it wasn't a hugely important doctor's appointment. It could wait. But the point is, and I think someone else made this as well, that actually going to the class makes them feel healthy.
Exactly. When we are in a situation where we're a patient and being seen by a doctor, just the experience of it can make us feel less healthy and even victimized. So the opportunity to do something else where they are making the choice to be in charge of their participation and their life is so important. So I don't know, you know, what the outcome of her doctor's appointment would be. However, just the chance to choose what you're doing and saying, even if I do have something serious in my health, I'm going to do that later. Right now, I'm going to enjoy life and enjoy this opportunity with other people.
And I'm curious, is there data, is there science to back up this notion that this kind of socialization, this kind of involvement in a community could actually, in some ways, extend your life or extend your healthy years?
Yes, well, I haven't seen data on specifically this type of program because I think Matthew has a niche, right?
It's quite unique.
Yes, a unique niche we haven't seen before. But social participation, social inclusion, social connection, people who have those things do have more longevity, whether it's through family networks or through specifically participating in programs such as at a senior center. There is different research to back both those things up. And then people who participate more and get out of the house more do have better health outcomes overall. If you live alone, for example, you're more likely to suffer injuries if you fall. So I've studied falls, fall injuries and fall prevention, and people who live alone suffer greater injuries when they do fall than people who live with others. So whether these people live alone or not, we don't know. Only the widower, Alan, talked about the relationship, having his wife been gone for 6 years, which I thought was interesting. None of the females mentioned their relationship. But being able to get out of the house and have socialization outside the house is important as well.
He actually described it as his therapy.
Exactly. So following the death of a spouse, people obviously go through grief. And there is a point at which some professionals are mixed, or doctors or social workers, gerontologists, on whether people are still in grief or whether it's turned into depression. So getting out of the house and having something to look forward to, having something, quote, to live for, even if it's something seemingly as benign or as innocuous as performing a scene from Fences or the Titanic, can be really important.
I'm particularly interested in this because on this podcast, we've talked to many scientists, scientists looking at the human body at a cellular level, right, trying to figure out how we can live longer, healthier lives. And clearly there is compelling evidence that we can do that by adapting the way that we live, our diet, our exercise regime. But it does leave this open question of what's the point of getting to 90 or 95 years old if then you hit this barrier where you might be healthy, but you face this social isolation and the potential to be lonely. And I'm just wondering if as much effort in society and academia is going into tackling that issue as is the biological component of physically, how do you get there?
Right. Well, I am not a biologist, so thank you for asking. I'm a social scientist. I'm a social worker by training, an urban planner by training, and a gerontologist by training. So my interest is in the city and how the environment and how our house and the location of our house impacts how we age and how healthy we can be as we age, how our social interactions with our neighbors or with our church or temple impact how we age, and in return, how our cities and communities can best meet the needs of our aging populations to keep healthcare costs down and to keep people living as healthily as they can.
And in terms of perhaps you could say educating that older population, In terms of what to expect when they get to a certain age where they need to utilize these facilities that you're talking about, there is, and I detect this a lot, talking to people of 80, 90, 100 years old, there's a reluctance to give up what they've had all their lives, and that is independence. It's right. Independence and it's close family. Right. And for those who get to a great age, they can find themselves actually very isolated because, sadly, their friends, and in many cases, their close family members are no longer here. So exactly. How do you bridge that gap?
Right. People want to stay living in their own home as long as possible, or even until death. And that's one thing I've studied a lot. One part I've studied is why are people so attached to their homes? So many younger people think, oh, once you turn of a certain age, you'll just move to a, quote, old folks home. Well, I do a lot of educating, even with my students who are in my school to study aging, about that isn't really what people do. They want to stay living in their own home. And the ways we can help them to educate old people as they age is to help educate them on how to make that work best for them. So people do want to stay living in their own homes because they have connections there. Their home may be where they raised their family, where their memories were made. Their home may have been built by a spouse. That spouse is now gone, and so that's the last connection they may have to someone. I've read studies of people who didn't even want to, you know, change the paint in a room because their husband had painted it. And so since he's gone, to change the room would be to take away part of their relationship. But I think people need to be realistic about what comes with age. And we don't have a good handle on that, I think, as a nation. In the U.S., people don't really know how their parents and grandparents are going to age and what they're going to do as they age as far as their living situations.
And is there perhaps something we could all do in terms of our attitude towards aging and what it's like to be 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years old and the kind of environment that we'll find ourselves in, that perhaps we need to start the adaptation to being very old earlier? And by that I'm thinking of perhaps keeping younger friends, mm-hmm. of socializing across a broader group so that that isolation that comes for some people doesn't happen quite suddenly, and that you progress into a stage in your life where, yes, by the very nature of the years passing by, you might be the oldest person in the group, but there are younger people with you.
Exactly. We need more intergenerational programs. And there are groups in the U.S. who do a good job of that. But there's ageism, where younger people don't want to be around old people. And they also do believe that old people live in nursing homes and they don't want to go in a place like that. Or some people, younger people say, I don't like hospitals. I don't want to go there. But the reality is the majority of older people live in their own homes. You might see them out on the street with a shopping bag walking home. But then once the older person gets home, what do? We need more intergenerational programs that build relationships between not only children and teenagers, but young adults and middle-aged people, along with older people. And I think one place we can do that is, of course, through senior centers. But again, back to religious congregations or community centers, I think we can do a better job.
Tuesdays with Matthew is a classic example of that. Here we have a young guy mixing with a group of seniors and getting along as friends. It wasn't just the young guy at the front of the room. They really had a friendship.
Exactly. He, in watching videos of him, it's obvious that he really knows his participants. He knows what they like. He has built a relationship with them. And that's so important, whether we're working with older people or teenagers, right? Building a relationship with someone and connecting with them makes a big difference. In the healthcare field, I found personally, I went through a health treatment for cancer. And when I had on a hospital gown, I was treated much differently than when I was in my street clothes talking to the physicians or the healthcare workers. And so I felt like there was more of a relationship where I could say what I needed to say when I was in street clothes, whether instead of when I was in a gown and I had to just take what they told me.
What's the difference between wearing a gown and street clothes in terms of how people speak to you? What is it, a different tone?
It's a different tone. People talk around you and about you. This was my experience, rather than to you or with you.
Like, how does she feel and what does she want?
Yes.
Like people do with elderly people.
Exactly. I had an experience, for example, where I was waiting in a hall for 3 hours with a hospital gown on. No one once asked me how I was feeling. In another experience, I was waiting for a test, and the two people in the room with me were just carrying on their conversation. When I started to cry, they said, "What's the matter, honey?" And I told them that just a few weeks ago, I was a mom with two small children trying to live my life, and now I'm laying here listening to them complain about their lunch break, and didn't they know what I was going through? So they only asked me how I was feeling because I was crying. Right? Mm-hmm. So these are some things we can educate. And I'm not trying to dig on healthcare workers. They do a great job in many aspects. But just for all of us to be able to build a relationship better and have empathy and talk to an older person, we assume a person we see on the street who might be taking too long to cross at that crosswalk, you know, we don't ever think about what they've gone through to get up, get out, get their shopping, get home. And then once they get home, what will they be doing there? Instead, we just think about how that's inconvenient because I'm trying to catch the next light to make it to my appointment on time.
I suppose in many respects, you could apply this conversation to relationships with all people.
Exactly.
You don't really know what that other person is going through or has gone through in the previous 2 hours or whatever traumas in their lives or indeed whatever happiness is going on in their lives that society these days tends to make us more isolated for many reasons.
Exactly. That's one thing we're starting to study. I'm just starting a study on social connectivity of older people using the internet and apps and technology. So there's been a few studies on it, but of course, as technology changes by leaps and bounds, we need to increase our studies. And so whereas some people are home alone, the internet has provided such a great opportunity for grandparents to see their grandchildren who might live 1,000 miles away and have a lot more socialization that they didn't have in the past. So we're starting to look at some of those issues and how older people and their access to the internet differs depending on where they're located and different socioeconomic backgrounds. But I think that will be really important also to see, you know, how technology can be used to help decrease isolation among seniors.
I think it's very clear that services like Skype and FaceTime, the benefits, the one-to-one, face-to-face conversation around the world that you can have, the clear benefits there, aren't there?
Exactly. Of course, human touch is important, and so being in the room with someone is so important. But when you can't, when your family has to live thousands of miles away for jobs or obligations, it is so important that today we can send our grandparents pictures. We can post them on Facebook. They can join there. They can check out what's going on in our lives. And that has really, I think, had a big impact on older people. Now, as baby boomers age, they are more tech savvy than some of our 91-year-olds. But there are 91-year-olds who definitely use social media and the internet. Some of them are YouTube stars, actually. But as baby boomers age, of course, they'll be more and more in tune with keeping connected to their social contacts and loved ones using technology.
I wonder if some of the issues and negative connotations that people harbor in terms of relating young people and elderly people together, is the media responsible for this? Is it because of the images that we see of old people that young people can't relate to, but because they're fed a certain message?
Yes. Yes. So older people, this is one of the things I study, older people and how they're represented on screen. So in fact, one of some examples I use a lot in my classes are older men and their homes. And one of my students said, "Well, why aren't we studying any older women in their homes?" And I said, "Well, how many movies about older women and their homes have you seen?" And 20-year-olds couldn't really name one. But for example, the cartoon Up with Carl Fredrickson, who's voiced by Ed Asner, here's a socially isolated man, or Clint Eastwood playing in Gran Torino, or more recently, the Swedish film A Man Called Ove, based on the popular book, which it was nominated for Best Foreign Film. Anyway, in that case, Ove, the man, is portrayed negatively. He's a curmudgeon. He's an old man who's a problem. He's miserable. And so how does his community respond around him? In many cases, you see the old man or widower in his home, and how does the community around him get by? And so I use examples from that, but there's examples in many, many different films where aging is portrayed negatively, whether that's because the filmmaker or screenwriters have that negative perception, or they just think they're playing into what we all think about older people as isolated, grumpy curmudgeons who live in that spooky house on the corner.
I wonder, was The Bucket List beneficial, the Jack Nicholson film?
Absolutely. Well, The Bucket List, that's become common parlance to use that term, right? And so a lot of my students, when I ask them to write about aging in films, they choose The Bucket List because that's something that is easy to look at. And we all can be asked, what do you want to do if you know you have a certain number of months to live, whether you're 21 or 91? But yes, The Bucket List was important to helping people see that older people can have lighthearted fun. They do have relationships. They need to do things besides sit around and worry about what's happening to them tomorrow. And the fact that bucket list has become a common term means that it really has had an impact. I'd like to see more films, you know, make an impact like that.
And what about television? The impression is that television is a very youthful arena now, whether it's news anchors or people on sitcoms or talk shows, daytime television. The emphasis does seem to be you don't really have to watch for very long. You don't see that many old people represented. Is that an issue?
Well, late night comedy shows, which I do enjoy to watch, are notoriously ageist, and they get away with making horrible comments about older people. Now, they do sometimes make horrible comments that might be racist or sexist or things like that as well, but somehow they get away with and think it's totally fine to make ageist comments. And people laugh at them. And I'm not saying I don't enjoy watching late night comedy as well, especially in a political season. However, I do find myself tweeting messages to some of these hosts saying, why are you allowed to say something like that? That is horrible. The bottom line, though, apart from late night television, most people who watch network television in prime time are older women. And so when they don't see characters on TV that represent them or that might make them have a poor self-image, that does concern me. There are shows, even though on the pay TV, Grace and Frankie with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin has been fantastic and is two older characters that many older adults are familiar with, and it can be funny and people can laugh at it, and it's about issues that pertain today. So shows like that are exciting for older people to watch, but how many older people watch them if they do not have the satellite or cable TV, I do not know.
Just talking about your own attitude towards your own personal longevity. Now, you mentioned to me, I didn't know this, but you had a battle with cancer, which clearly is something that will focus the mind at a young age,
right,
which you are now. But what is your own attitude in terms of your lifestyle as you get older?
Good question. Well, I did. I was diagnosed with cancer when I was 35. And ironically, I had just gone back to school to study aging and just 1 month into it, I was diagnosed with cancer. So I found myself chuckling and upset. Why have I gone back to school to study cancer? And now here I am at a cancer hospital with all these older people, right? So that was beneficial in that it's made me enjoy life, enjoy people's stories, realize I need to make memories. Everyone, no one knows what will happen to them tomorrow. But we are told that people will live into such old age, and so we tend to put off thinking about our bucket list or about what will happen to us tomorrow. So as far as my own health, physically, I try, obviously, to be healthy, eat well, exercise, etc., but I feel like I did those things before. So part of me says, you know what? What the heck, right? Before, I was super healthy and I still got cancer, so I'm going to enjoy that chocolate if I want to, because I can't limit what I'm going to do. I would have a hard time living on a caloric restriction diet in order to live longer, because I want to enjoy life while I'm here. So other research, which is very important, that tells us that reducing calories and living and eating a certain way will make us live longer is fantastic. But at the same time, I want people and myself to enjoy life.
Well, that's precisely why I wanted to do this interview, at least one of the reasons, because as you know, as listeners to this podcast know, we have talked a lot about fasting, about periodic fasting, the five-day fast that Dr. Walter Longo, one of your colleagues right. at USC, has introduced. And there's a lot of good, solid science behind that research that shows that if we adapt the way that we live, and especially in terms of our diets, that it could perhaps improve our chances of getting to a ripe old age. It could have implications for cancer, for heart disease, for diabetes. There's good solid science there. However, we've spoken to other people, other distinguished scientists, who say, yes, there's clearly something in it, but I just can't do it.
Right.
Personally, fasting or other regimes are actually quite hard to keep to. And I always come back to, and most people that I interview, scientists, come back to the idea that moderation in everything is probably the best way to go. Moderation in your diet and your exercise, and you're probably going to be doing okay. You might not be doing something that will help you live to an extreme old age, and I don't think anyone can really predict that, even with the science that we have now, but that you've got to live for today as well as tomorrow.
Exactly. Living for today as well as our future health depends on our mental health. So keeping a healthy social and positive attitude is important, whether you want to stick to a strict diet or get out of the house tomorrow and go participate in a social program. I have found that, yeah, having moderation in everything you do will benefit you. And so we need to help younger and older people learn to live in a way that is healthy and not expect them to do things that are unrealistic. I find that in my own life and in teaching other people about what we can expect older people to do as far as their longevity.
That is a great way to end this. Caroline, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Very interesting. And let's leave the final word to Matthew Hoffman and his senior citizens here in Los Angeles.
What I have learned from coming here for so long and making such great friends. I mean, make no mistake, these people that you heard today, they are my friends. And I have learned that it's just really, it all comes down to everything that we do, everything that we deal with. The common thing is connection and love. And that is what we do here every week, whether it's scripts, music, improv, whatever it is. There's 20 people, 30 people, 40 people a week who have trusted me with this insane platform to have them connect. And we do that weekly. And I'm so thankful for that.
Matthew, it's a great project. Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us. And thanks for coming. And next time you're going to do a scene.
It's a deal. Is that a wrap?
Good. All right.
Thank you, guys. It's been fun.
Round of applause. Happy birthday, Sonia. Sonia is 91. I have a lot more cupcakes. Betty, you look good in class.
FlexBeam is a portable red light therapy device that's now being used by leading athletes, including the Norwegian tennis player Casper Ruud.
Whenever you put the FlexBeam on, you feel it starts to work right away. I need something that can help repair all the fibers that I have broken in the serves.
The infrared lights penetrate your skin and makes the muscle tissue recover faster. FlexBeam, I keep it with me all the time.
Recharge Health is offering Llama Podcast listeners an $80 discount on the purchase of a FlexBeam device. Go to the website recharge.health and use the code Llama at checkout. That's LLAMA. You'll also find the link in the show notes for this episode.